And we'll move to our third case this morning, United States v. Darrell Loving. All right, good morning. Mr. Henderson is here in the courtroom, and Mr. Whalen, I see you on the screen, so we can proceed. Mr. Henderson.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Peter Henderson. I represent Darrell Loving. The district court miscalculated and misapprehended the guidelines range. I think the parties agree on that. Let me tell you why practically I think that's a problem. In the district court's comments, both on the record at sentencing and in its statements of reasons, it laid out, according to the 3553A factors, why particularly a guideline sentence was appropriate. And given the aggravating circumstances, it went to the high end of the guidelines range. But it didn't understand that the guidelines range was 51 to 63 months. It thought it was higher because the government told it it was higher. I have full confidence looking at this record that had the district court understood the guidelines range, it would have imposed a 63-month sentence because it would have gone to the top of the guidelines range. It heard the aggravating evidence from the government, and none of the rest of its analysis would have changed. But this was a guidelines-driven sentence, and the district court simply misunderstood the guidelines range.
Mr. Henderson, you're not challenging the district court's factual finding that Mr. Loving's conduct did pose a substantial risk of death or bodily injury to more than one person, are you?
I'm not directly. I don't think the district court made a factual finding. I mean, he said your objection's overruled. Let's proceed. So there's an inferred, I trust the government's evidence there. What's unclear?
Not that it would matter necessarily here, but
right, I don't think it does. What's unclear to me is whether the district judge actually understood the nature of the dispute. Part of the confusion was the pre-sentence report had the wrong range in it because of that acceptance of responsibility problem. And it sure looks like from the record that the judge thought, oh, that's the range, and then asked defense counsel, well, wait, why didn't you object to this range earlier? When, of course, he had in the sentencing memorandum. And we were addressing the government's variance argument. What makes this difficult to assess for things like harmless error or 3553A factors, things like that, is that the district judge just didn't make a very good record on what the factual findings were, what in particular about the 3553A factors warranted this increased sentence. We really have to guess. We can make inferences, but one of the things that practitioners do in approaching sentencing is they have experiences before district judges, and some district judges, they say, this is a guidelines judge. We got to fight the guidelines because that's going to be the sentence. Others, we say, well, that's a 3553A judge. We're not going to worry too much about the guidelines because really what we're interested in is in the ultimate sentence. And I think it's entirely rational here to look at this transcript and say, in approaching the sentencing, what we're really concerned about is the guidelines.
Mr. Henderson, could I ask you to address the government's invited error argument?
I'd be glad to. I'm not sure that I understand it fully because
defense counsel did object to the guideline range.
Right. So defense counsel stated the position in a sentencing memorandum, the guidelines range should be 51 to 63 months. The district judge announced at sentencing it's 57 to 71, and defense counsel objected. That preserves the error. The government is the one that conflated variances with departures, and I think what happened really is the government internally said, how do we cabin our prosecutorial discretion in what sentence above the guidelines range is appropriate? And internally they thought, Let's base it on the guidelines. Let's say maybe a level.
Well, the guidelines do invite a departure in such a case, right?
Well, they do, although that's archaic at this point because departures no longer exist.
Actually, they do, but and the opinion that was written by Chief Judge Sykes that you cited along those points goes into all the nuances about how they are still relevant in guiding district judges' discretion. But in essence, there would still, if we do remand, there would be two routes to the same result, right? A departure under the provision on endangerment, given what happened here, 100 miles an hour through an accident scene, and just a straight 3553A variance, right?
I'm not sure that's correct, just because my reading of that opinion that I have cited essentially says departures are obsolete.
Well, it says that at one point in one respect.
Well, then I haven't read it completely.
They're obsolete as an input to the guidelines range. That's the import of our cases.
Well, and they
are in the handbook, and they can be consulted, but it's a step two inquiry. It's not a step one inquiry. The step one inquiry is the guidelines calculation, and the judge was plainly confused about what was going on here.
Right.
And the government started it. You didn't start it.
Thanks. No, that's exactly right. Whether we call it a variance or departure, we know it's based on the guidelines text that says, consider this in aggravation.
We know that the district judge here said, I'm given a guideline sentence several times.
Correct.
Yeah.
And
okay.
our point is, we want to start with the presumption that the guideline sentence is 51 to 63 months, because that is the guidelines range.
Did the addendum to the pre-sentence fix the error in the original pre-sentence about the third point for acceptance of responsibility?
I couldn't give you the answer to that. I don't think it did.
An addendum?
I'm not sure there was an addendum.
Judge said he read it.
Well, there was a...
Am I misreading that?
Was there an addendum after the fact?
I'm not sure that there was, but I don't have that in front of me. I'm sorry. I don't think there was, and ultimately the judge in a statement of reason said this is the range.
Okay, so...
Yeah. I think that,
unclear what he was referring to.
And I mean, really what happened was the parties agreed outside of the PSR that this was a 51 to 63 months, and nobody ever corrected the PSR. I think that's what happened. Unless there are any other questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Whalen, good morning.
Morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Nathaniel Whalen here on behalf of the United States of America. The district court did not prejudicially err when it sentenced Mr. Loving based on an offense level 24 rather than the 23. What it did was it did exactly what the guidelines told it to do in application note 6 of 3C1.2 and impose a departure because the defendant created substantial risk of bodily injury to multiple individuals. This was a technical error. What it should have done is what the government recommended in its sentencing memorandum, which is take offense level 23 and then after the fact determine the variance or departure, as the guideline calls it, up to offense level 24 and sentence in that range. And Your Honors, you know, looking at this record, there's no reason to remand for a full resentencing because there's no substantial probability the court is going to impose a different sentence when, in Your Honors' terms, it takes step one and step two analysis separately as opposed to combining them in the first instance.
The court here seemed confused about the guideline calculation and confused about additional level off for acceptance of responsibility and then the extra points under 3C1.2. So how can we be so sure in light of what seems from the record apparent confusion and his real grounding of this sentence in the guidelines? How can we be so sure that there's harmlessness here?
Well, Your Honor, I guess let me address a couple points there. I don't think there's any way to look at this record and say the court didn't grant the third level for acceptance of responsibility. It had read the sentencing memorandum, it had read the PSR guideline calculations, and it had read the calculation of guideline offense levels where the third level was laid out. And Judge Sykes, let me first just factually, there was an addendum at docket 31. There were no objections to anything in the PSR.
Did the addendum address the third point for acceptance of responsibility and reduce the guidelines range accordingly?
The addendum did not, Your Honor, because the government moved for the third level after the addendum had been published.
The addendum came out before sentencing, correct?
Correct. So the timeline is that there's the PSR, both parties state no objection, then there's the addendum, and that's up through docket 31. Then in docket 33, the government files its sentencing memorandum where it moves for the third level of acceptance of responsibility. And it tells the court that...
What did the addendum add? by way of additional adjustments to the guideline range.
The addendum did not touch anything in the PSR whatsoever. It noted that there were no objections to the PSR because there were no objections to the PSR. So the government moves for the third level in the sentencing memorandum, which is docket 33. I apologize. And then it suggests that the court impose the sentence based on an effective range where the offense level is 24.
But the judge clearly understood the government's argument to be a request for an adjustment to the guidelines range, a 1-point elevation in the guidelines range, so that the range would have a maximum of 71 months, and that's what the judge imposed.
Well, Your Honor, going back to
that's how the court appears to have understood the government's argument, that this was still all about the guidelines calculation and not a 3553 analysis that's guided by Chapter 3.
Well, Your Honor, I guess...
So, because there is no 3553 analysis whatsoever in the judge's decision.
And I apologize for interrupting, Your Honor. This medium doesn't work very well for me knowing when the court's done asking questions. But, you know, the government proposes this analogy of a variance and an effective guideline range of 24 in its sentencing memorandum, which is docket 33. We do use the word departure because that's what the guidelines use. If you look at the defendant's sentencing memorandum, which is docket 34, the defendant now says, I agree that the government's moved for the third level, and I have no objection to the court imposing a one-level departure. I leave it in the court's discretion. So the defendant has now taken our analogy with an effective range and winnowed it down and said, this is a pure departure analysis. That's docket 34. So then the court looks at the calculation of the guideline range, or the summary of guideline computation, which is docket 36. It looks at the facts in the PSR, and it comes out and it says, well, the defendant has told me that, you know, there's a departure if I agree factually under application note 6 that he endangered the life of multiple individuals. He didn't object, so I find the facts in the PSR support that. I'm going to base a calculation on offense level 24. This is at the actual sentencing. The court doesn't say I am adopting all of the guideline calculations in the PSR. The court says I find the offense level is 24. He asks for objections, and the defendant says, I object to the one level, right? I'm sorry. We would object to the increase under 3C1.2, the upward variance taking it to 24. And that's page 7. When you flip to page 8 of the sentencing transcript, the defendant's making clear he's not objecting to the court's use of a departure or a variance. He's objecting on the facts. He says the facts don't support anything beyond the two levels the party agreed apply.
What's the distinction?
Distinction between objecting to the facts and objecting to the methodology? Well, I think the objection to the facts and to whether the facts support the enhancement is a preserved argument. And if he had come on appeal, and I believe it was Chief Judge Sykes' question said, it might be Judge Sankey's question, do you object to the facts supporting the application note? That objection's preserved. Telling the court, I don't think the facts support this guideline is very different than saying you can't enhance me based on one level because of this departure variance analysis. That is not a preserved objection. And so regardless of what this court thinks of the invited error analysis, the objection at the least is forfeited. And then when you get to pages 23 and 24 of the sentencing transcript, so the three witnesses testify, and then the defense makes an objection or argues the objection, and again lays out that it's objecting to the facts and circumstances and to whether they merit an increase to offense level 24. The district court says your objection's not well taken, and it applies an offense level 24, which again, we do concede is an error. But based on this record, there's no reason to think the district court, if it imposes, you know, conflates step 1 and 2 here, it's going to impose a different sentence if this court remands for a full resentencing and says, well, you got to separate out your math a little bit. And step 1 here, get to 23, but then you can go up to 24 after the fact.
I may be confusing a couple of different cases being argued today, Mr. Whalen, but did the prosecutor ask the judge to make a finding to the effect that the sentence would be the same regardless of the guideline calculation?
Not in those words. What the prosecutor did request the court is basically say, we agree you calculated the guideline range correctly. But regardless of that, We believe that the 3553A factors support it.
Okay.
And, Your Honor, the judge, I guess getting...
Not, the judge did not make such a statement.
There is no statement like that in the record, correct, Your Honor?
Okay.
But, you know, it's our position that Molina, Martinez, and the like has to allow for harmlessness besides the court saying, I would have given the same sentence regardless. You know, that can't be the entire universe of harmless errors if the court makes that statement at the sentencing.
Mr. Whalen, in the written statement of reasons from the court indicated it was adopting the PSR without change. And we know that the PSR's guideline calculation was not accurate. What impact should that have?
Well, Your Honor, as this court noted in the Brown case that both parties cite, you should really only look at the statement of reasons if there's ambiguities to what went on in the sentencing itself. It's our position that
there
you don't need
to seems
to
be a bit of ambiguity here.
Your Honor's point is well taken. It's our position, though, that the court understood what was going on, and there's no reason to look at the statement of reasons.
Let's assume there's some ambiguity, Mr. Whalen. Which I think might be a fair assumption here, but let's assume that. What impact should the statement of reasons have on our ultimate outcome?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, referring to the specific portion of the statement of reasons, that was wrong. There were changes to, there were not changes to the PSR because there was no objection to the PSR.
But the PSR itself was not accurate because of the 1 point reduction, one level reduction came up in the course of the government sentencing memorandum.
That's correct, Your Honor. And maybe it would have been best practice to have gone back and amended the PSR. Say, you know, the government's moved for the third level, so we're now at offense level 23. Ultimately, we think that the court should focus on the sentencing transcript. And in light of the sentencing transcript, there was no prejudicial error.
Well, focusing on that sentencing transcript in imposing sentence, the judge said that the sentence is imprisonment for 71 months, followed by 3 years of supervision, which is within the applicable guidelines sentencing range. Which
that's
again,
correct,
clearly, you know, there's ambiguity about what the government was arguing here, but the judge thought he was imposing a guideline sentence and thought the guidelines range topped out at 71.
Well, and Your Honor, that goes to our point about the invited error. It's our belief that the defendant's the one telling him this is the guideline range. If you overrule my objection based on the facts to application note 6 of 3C1.2, it makes the guideline range 24. And the defendant makes that argument at pages 7 and 8, again at 23 and 24. And
then the defendant just not what the defense counsel said. The defense counsel was recharacterized the government's departure analysis as variance analysis, which was an appropriate correction, and argued against it.
Well, he objected to it as a variance at that stage, at what Your Honor would deem step one.
It's not a step one analysis. The government led with the wrong argument here by characterizing it as a guidelines argument when it was not, and leading the judge to conclude that this amounted to a recalculation of the guidelines range based on the application of an additional offense level point.
Your Honor, I don't think that's what our sentencing memorandum says. Our sentencing memorandum uses the language of the guideline, which is departure, but we are very explicit in there that it is base offense level 23. And we're asking the court to impose the equivalent of a range of an offense level 24. And that's pages 1 and 2 of the sentencing memorandum on docket entry 33. So unless this court has any further questions, we would ask that you affirm the sentence below. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Henderson.
Unless the court has questions.
All right. Thank you very much. I don't know if you heard that, Mr. Whalen. Mr. Henderson has nothing further. Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.